Welcome, my name is Divine. This is episode 479 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. In today's podcast, I'm going to be discussing a topic called the Excellent Residency Applicant. The Excellent Residency Applicant. Essentially, I just want to put together a bunch of things that I feel like make for a person that's a good applicant for residency programs. And I'm going to try to remove all the fluff and just get right to it. So let's just get in. So, and this is in no particular order, but the very first thing I will say that makes for an excellent residency applicant is a score for your situation. I'm going to say that again, a score for your situation. The thing is, people always ask, should I get in the 240s? Should I get in the 250s? Should I get in the 260s? But honestly, that's not the right question to ask. The right question to ask is this. Okay, given XYZ about my application, is this score going to be enough? Or what's the score that will be needed, given all these things I have going for me, or all these things I have going against me? There are some people that are applying to the same discipline. Let's say, oh, they're all applying to ortho. There are some people that can apply to ortho and have a very stellar application cycle, with a score in the 240s. But there are some people that are also applying to ortho that will have a very crappy application cycle, even if they have those same 240s, right? So it kind of varies by person. Some people need in the 250s, 260s to make a good application for the same discipline. And some people just need a score in the 240s to make a good application for the same discipline because they just have other components of the application that work to their advantage, right? And the thing is, many people make these score things based on stuff they read online, right? They'll say, oh, my program screens out. If you don't get on the over 250, my program will screen you out. The thing is, honestly, many times, those things are lies from people. That's just the truth. Many times, those things are just straight up, good old, fat out lies, right? So that's the thing. Like many people, and even they'll say, oh, the average of this going into this specialty is that. Again, remember, it's an average. It's an average. There's some people below that average. There's some people above that average, right? So the thing is, don't interpret your circumstances to automatically mean, oh, it's going to be exactly like this other person's circumstances based on my scores. No, that's not the way things work, right? The person may have a score that's in the 240s, but man, they have like many other things going for them. So just make sure you have a score for your situation. I'm just trying to say this so you have a more realistic and a more holistic view of what makes sense for your application. Obviously, in a podcast like this, I cannot go ahead and start discussing, okay, all these technicalities. I could literally maybe do a 20-hour podcast just dealing with those different permutations. Doesn't make any sense. But hopefully you get the principle. Now, what's the second thing to keep in mind in terms of a good residency applicant? Another qualification of a good residency applicant is a consistent theme, a consistent theme. Basically, the long and short of this, of all of this is this. Your residency application should have a consistent theme. You, the theme you present when people interview and everything, should be congruent with who is in your application. The thing is, you'd be amazed at how bad the themes for some people's residency, like how bad or the level of discontinuity that exists between people's residency applications. You see some people, their residency applications, they look phenomenal. And then when you see them in person, you're like, man, this looks nothing like who I read about. I've had that experience. I've been an admissions committee member before, and I've worked with tons of people that have, you know, matched into residency and everything, right? And I've seen this a lot. You see people, they sound so glowing when you read their CV or read their personal statement and everything. But when you talk to them, you're like, wow, this person is a horrible person. This person has no business practicing medicine, right? So the thing is, just make sure that you have a consistent theme. A consistent theme in who you are and a consistent theme in what you put out application-wise. Okay, so if, for example, you have a theme of, wow, I'm a teacher, 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 that teacher has to shine through. Don't write about something that you're not. Because again, in the hands of a good interviewer, a person that has worked with tons of people, if the theme of your application does not match up with the theme of your personality, does not match up with the theme of who you are, then you're going to be in a very bad spot. And the thing is, some people may say, but Divine, you know, what if I'm a bad interviewer, but I'm actually a good person? Well, the thing is, you can work on that. There's nothing, there are very few things in life you cannot truly train for, right? So the thing is, work on yourself. That's the truth. Some people literally that I've worked with for residency applications, all they literally had to do was to do what? Work on themselves. Literally, work on themselves. So I really, really encourage you, work on yourself. Work on yourself. Prepare yourself. I've seen people that are horrible interviewers and they become just much better as time goes on. So that's just something to keep in mind, that consistent thing. Now, what's item number three? Item number three is what I like to call prudently addressed red flags. The thing is, some people have red flags and then they try to hide it, which again, sometimes makes no sense because chances are it will probably be discovered. Again, there are certain things that, yeah, you very likely don't need to mention at all. But there are, if you have red flags and you know that, wow, this is something that's out there and everything, you need to mention it, but not just mention it, you need to address it. There's a big difference between mentioning a red flag versus addressing prudently a red flag, right? Because you see some people, they have these red flags, they just mentioned that, oh, I failed a USMLE exam once or something. But then they don't address it. Oh, they're like, okay, at least I mentioned you have come clean. No, that's not all you need to do. You need to prudently address it. You need to show people, okay, this red flag, why did this red flag happen? How did you realize that you were making that mistake? What have you done? And how are you maintaining that good behavior, right? You need to address red flags. You cannot just mention them and just gloss over them, right? You need to address them. You need to address them, right? You need to address them in a prudent fashion. You need to find a way to make up for that red flag, right? Sometimes it's just, again, describing it well and explaining what you've done to counter that red flag, right? But you need to prudently address your red flags. And then the fourth item is you need to have a well-written personal statement. I'll tell you this, the two most important components of any application before you're even seen as a residency applicant are your USMLE scores and your personal statement. That's the truth. Many people think that, wow, the research is very important, the hobbies and extracurricular activities are important. Don't get me wrong, they are. They are. But I'm telling you, like, one of the very first yardsticks you're going to be measured with is the quality of your personal statement and the quality of your USMLE scores. Again, many people just ignore this stuff, but it's kind of important. That's just the truth, right? You need to have a well-written personal statement. I believe I've probably made a podcast in the past on how to write a good personal statement, right? So just make sure you have a well-written personal statement. Again, I'm not saying the research does not matter, right? But the thing is, many times in my experience, research and extracurriculars are almost like placeholders that you just need to fulfill, right? Like, for example, you're trying to go into like this discipline or whatever, and this discipline is, oh, they value research so much. Well, if you have no research at all, then it's going to be a problem. But if you have the research, right, you have the publications, you have this, you have that, then they will very likely just gloss over that just to make sure that, okay, this person checks this research box for this discipline, right? But people, if you want to ask yourself, man, what part of my application do people really go granular on? They really go granular on personal statements and a person's USMLE scores. And then what's item number five? Item number five is removing fluff. Get fluff out, right? I'm telling you, this is a problem I see pervasively with a lot of people. Especially international medical graduates, you see lots of fluff in these applications. And the thing is, honestly, I understand where people are coming from. Because for me, I mean, I'm not originally from the US, you know, but, you know, you see people, they write these thick descriptions of every single thing that they have done, make it pages and pages and pages and pages. And they believe that, wow, by just embellishing myself hard like this, then programs are going to take a strong look at me. Trust me, you could not be further from the truth. You're literally screwing yourself over. That is just the truth. So I would just strongly encourage you, you know, just try to get fluff out, right? Be high yield. I'm telling you, programs love a high yield application and they love a high yield individual. Where do you think this whole concept of supplemental applications came from? And if you look at the severe restrictions that are placed on how much you can write in a supplemental application, it's because programs are trying to get the high yield out of people, right? Because ERAS applications have just become an absolute mess in many people's hands, right? So honestly, like in your personal statement, in your ERAS applications, even in your interviews, be high yield. Present the most important picture, right? Don't talk in circles. Don't make people almost like, oh, wow, it's almost like I'm reading this 2,000 page textbook to learn 100 pages worth of stuff that I need for an exam. Think about it. You as a medical student, you're chasing after high yield by consulting some resources, right? And avoiding some others. So why do you want to waste the time of a person that's interviewing you, right? So get fluff out. Get fluff out. Many times in my experience, like about half of the things that people write in describing the experiences in ERAS are an absolute wash. They need like literally none of those things. And then a corollary to that would be my sixth point. My sixth point would be an appropriate amount of bulk. An appropriate amount of bulk. Again, I know some of these principles I'm stating, you're like, man, Divine, these principles kind of sound weird. But again, I've done this thing now for years, right? I've been on an admissions committee at a top two medical school, and I've worked on tons more applications than honestly I can remember, right? And you need to have an appropriate amount of bulk for things. You see people, they write a half-page personal statement, and you just kind of scratch your head, right? Well, you see people, and their ERAS application is like 3 pages after you like put in everything and download it. Like, it shouldn't be. Come on, you got to have an appropriate amount of bulk, right? You got to have an appropriate amount of bulk. But make sure that that bulk is not trash. That's the thing, right? Because you can have bulk trash, right? You don't want to have bulk trash. You don't want any of that, right? You want an appropriate amount of bulk. So you want to go into an appropriate level of detail of your experiences. You also want to, you know, just mention things, you know? So many times I try to tell people this. You want to have an application where if they put everything together, you know, like they download your ERAS app, you know, it's about 6 pages long, right? It's about 6 pages long, 6 pages roughly, right? But when you start getting into, wow, these people's ERAS applications you downloaded, wow, it's 13 pages. Wow, 14 pages. I'm telling you, you're beginning to get out of rope with people that are reviewing your applications. That's just the truth, right? So you should have an appropriate amount of bulk. Again, I'm not going to sit down and say, wow, this exact number, but you get the point. The thing is, many times in my podcast, I try to make sure you understand principles, right? An appropriate amount of bulk means you have a decent amount of information to where people are like, okay, this person actually put in like some level of effort and time to prepare this thing, right? So if your entire ERAS application, when it's downloaded, is 4 pages, that's not okay, right? Honestly, you want to get it to about 6 pages. That's the truth. You want to get it to about 6 pages, right? And again, make sure you don't put bulk trash. Oh, wow, this thing you did for only like 1 hour on a Saturday like 5 years ago. Doesn't make any sense. Oh, wow, this thing you did in high school that you did on a Saturday. You see people furnishing all those things. That's pretty ridiculous, right? Don't do that to yourself. Again, the thing is, people think that the people reviewing these applications are stupid. They're really not, right? Chances are your application is one of thousands of applications they've read over the years. So they know when something is good and when something is trash. Trash will literally be trashed. Good will be moved on to the next stage of the process. Okay, so I think let's go ahead and go to another point. So to point number seven, right? Point number seven is a uniqueness that makes you stand out. You need to have something unique about you. Let me tell you this. There's no person that is a generic human being. No, there is something unique about you. Something unique about you, right? What separates you from other people? You know, not something generic. There's no such thing as a generic human being. Even human beings all have like different fingerprints, as far as I'm aware, right? So there's something that's unique about you, right? Even if you're good at baking, you may be like, wow, Divine, there are many people that can bake. But is there something you can bake that's like just out of this world? Is there something that, man, when you bake this stuff, people are like, wow. Then go into specifics. Be specific. I'm telling you this, even a generic quality can stand out if you make it specific. If you bring specificities, just kind of like the difference between a D-dimer and a CT angiogram with contrast of the chest, right? You know, a D-dimer is kind of like a catch-all. Man, if we try to see, wow, is your D-dimer elevated, right? If your D-dimer is elevated, it could mean many different things. That's like the generic, but the catch-all. But the thing is, why don't you just go a little more specific? Presents the CT angiogram with contrast version of yourself. What's that thing about you that's pretty unique, that's not really found in many other people, right? Just go specific. I'm trying to almost essentially releasing the principle to you here. Go specific on your generics, Go specific on your generics. There is always a unique selling point of you, even if it's a generic item, right? So personalize those things. Sometimes you may even have a unique life history, and that may be the unique thing about you. Go ahead and present those things. Okay, now for the sake of time, let's go to item number 8. I really want to keep this podcast short. Item number 8 is having a cohesive answer for the classic questions. Having a cohesive answer for the classic questions. The thing is, many people, they try to like, oh, let me write down 500 interview questions and try to present no answers for all of them. That's pretty unwise, right? All the people that waste time doing those kinds of prep, you're just shooting yourself in the foot. The thing is, there are some questions, though, where you're like, I need to know the answers to these classic questions, right? It's almost like the stuff on every USMLE exam where you know that this stuff is going to show up, right? Like, you know, risk factors are going to show up. You know, immunodeficiency diseases are going to show up. You know, nephrotic syndromes are going to show up, right? So, you know, on pretty much every interview you go for, there's going to be some classic things. You need to have cohesive answers for those classic things, right? So like, for example, like, oh, why do you want to go into XYZ discipline? Where do you see yourself, you know, in XYZ years? How do you plan to contribute to this XYZ discipline in the future, right? Tell us about yourself. You need to have cohesive, well thought out answers for those questions. But the other stuff, you still have to be flexible, right? You're going to be caught off guard in some way, shape or form. Okay. And then, I'm really trying to use analogies in this podcast because I feel like those can really, really drive the point home. Okay. And then the final thing I think I'm going to say here is just having conversational intelligence. Conversational intelligence, right? This is why prep is important, right? Conversational intelligence. You see people, right? And they just don't read the room. You got to be able to read the room in real time and make adjustments, right? Like, for example, if you go for a basketball game, right? And you're going with this plan and you're like, stuck with this plan that no, I'm not going to change anything. But what if your opponents make adjustments? You got to make adjustments to those adjustments. I mean, this is why I love LeBron James so much. There are coaches that have said that LeBron James makes adjustments to the adjustments to the adjustments, right? So you need to like read the room. There are some situations where you may know that, wait, in this interview situation, I don't need to spend time talking about my research. I need to spend time talking about my personal characteristics. There are some interviews you go for where, oh, wow, you need to focus on certain aspects of who you are that, oh, you don't necessarily talk about often. But you're like, wait, this is the thing that's going to help me nail it with this particular residency program, right? Because the thing is, residency programs value different things. So you need to be able to get a read on what do they value and then present what they value to them. But what they value may be different for every program, right? So having that conversational intelligence, honestly, it's just something that you build with skill, but it's also something you build with just observation and research. Like, wait, what does this program seem to value? What's like the theme? Every program has a theme, right? Like, for example, if you look up Johns Hopkins has a theme. You look up Mayo, Mayo has a theme. Like, what are things that these programs seem to focus on? Try to present those things in the interview setting. Right. And as you do those things, I think you'll be in good shape. So I think I'm going to go ahead and end the podcast here. If you need help with your applications, I do offer help with personal statements, rec letters, many different things, in mock interviews, even this whole conversational intelligence business, and just editing ERAS applications, supplemental applications and stuff. If you're interested, just shoot me an email through the website. I can give you some more information. And I have review courses in the month of September for step one, for step two, step three, many courses, right? The test taking course, biostats class, social sciences and quality improvement class and ethics class. And then I have the 25-hour step one course and the 20-hour step two, step three course. So if you're interested, just shoot me an email. I have these podcasts on the major apps, Apple, Google, Spotify. I have a YouTube channel, Divine Intervention, USMLE podcasts and videos. And then I also have another website called DivineInterventionLifeLessons.com. From a biblical perspective, I put up 2 podcasts every week that address a life lesson. I have more than 200 podcasts on there, actually. And there's actually an Apple podcast associated with that called the Divine Intervention Life Lessons podcast. So if you're interested in any of these, just shoot me an email or check those out, and I think you'll find it to be helpful. Well, until next time, bye for now. God bless you.